sleep. To be.
Hey everyone, Sammy here. Before we get started this week, I just wanted to give a slight content warning. So this week we're going to be talking about a show that has to deal with sexual assault and some sexual violence. So I just wanted to kind of give you guys a heads up before listening. Thanks.
Oh God, this woman's about to tell me.
We are recording.
Woo!
Hello everyone. Hi girls and gays.
Hello.
Sammy Purcell.
And I'm Logan Keller.
Welcome to Rate, Debate, Recreate. This is episode 10 of this season.
Crazy. And a bonus episode.
Yeah.
We're really putting out that content.
We are. You should be thankful. we'll get to that later. We might take a little bit of a slowdown. I guess we can say that now. We both have, I think, gotten a little behind on work as it is.
Yes.
So we might take next week off to kind of get back in the groove with a few more episodes under our belts. And then we'll be back to you after that.
Finish off the season. And we still got, this is going to be a 17 episode season. So yeah. Don't you worry. There's still a lot more coming after this little intermission.
Plenty of episodes. That's a good way to describe it. It's like we're actually at a show and this is intermission.
Yeah. And this is a great act one closer, if I do say so myself.
I think so too. I'm pretty excited. Speaking of which, hey Logan.
Yes, Sammy.
What's your favorite color?
Oh, I love like, and I know this is so unique of me. I love like a deep, like indigo blue, like a blue purple almost.
Okay.
Kinda I would like
say like blue.
This.
Ooh, Logan is showing me an example of color.
on my Moonology Oracle cards. Hit me up for a reading sometime.
I really like indigo. I think I like a little lighter blue. I'm looking around. I don't really have like a good...
Like sky or minty or like...
No, like darker than that. Like kind of like the sky is almost the night sky. Like, but not when the sun setting, but like right when it still looks blue, it doesn't look black. But it's like lighter.
Yes.
It's not like purple. And that makes sense. I don't know. Maybe it does. Maybe.
Yes. No, it makes sense.
Well, for those of you who are new to Rate, Debate, Recreate, this is a great episode to join. Welcome. We're glad you're here. But what Logan and I do here is we, each week, we pick a show. We rate that show on a scale of 1 to 10. We debate which one is better. And then we think of one aspect that we would change and recreate it, loosely or strictly, you know, depending on, that's how we do it. It varies each week. So each week we have a category, and this week that category is colors.
Colors!
And my show is Moulin Rouge.
And my show is The Color Purple.
Two shows that are definitely just about colors.
I mean, last season we had a numbers episode, so we had to do colors this time.
That's true. We had to follow it up. Like, we need kind of a weird, really blanket category each time.
Also, just a reminder for the context, because I feel like the context makes our categories make more sense. Mm-hmm. Sammy and I, like, draft all of our shows first. So we each have a set number of shows, and then from those shows, we try to fit them into categories. Yeah. So this was like an obvious one, like two shows about colors, let's do colors.
There's one coming up, one category that I'm really excited for. I'll tell you when we get there, but this is a little preview.
There's a few for me.
So should we get started?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, perfect. So Moulin Rouge is a 2001 absolute sparkly, glittery, silly masterpiece of a show. It came out as a movie first. It is now a musical on Broadway, which I'll get to a little bit in my discussion of it. But the original movie is very
reopening, I think, in like October.
Yes, it is. I really wish I could see it. I do have some thoughts though, but we'll get to those. It is a movie, is directed and co-written by Baz Luhrmann of like Romeo and Juliet, Australia, Strictly
Gatsby.
Gatsby fame, infamously. And the movie stars Nicole Kidman, Ewan McGregor, Hard Eyes, John Leguizamo, Jim Broadbent, lots of famous people, people you know. And basically the plot follows Christian. It's set in Paris in like 1900, and it follows Christian, who is suffering from depression after a certain event, which I won't spoil, though at this point I don't know how you don't know. He begins kind of writing. He's a writer, and he begins writing this story, and we're taken back in time to a year earlier when he had just moved to Paris because he wanted to be a true revolutionary bohemian, and he meets a troupe of these performers, and they kind of enlist him to help them finish their show, which is called Spectacular Spectacular, which they're trying to sell to the owner of the Moulin Rouge named Zidler. So they get there, and they kind of are introduced to the world of the Moulin Rouge, and Christian ends up meeting Satine, who is a courtesan, and there's like kind of a comedy of errors in there. Satine is supposed to meet this duke and kind of like woo him because he's going to be like an investor in the show that they're putting on, and she mistakes Christian for the duke, so she like, there's a very funny scene where she tries to seduce him, blah, 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 all that stuff happens. They end up falling in love, but they kind of have to keep it a secret because Satine is still trying to keep the duke interested enough to continue to invest in the show. Because that's showbiz, baby. The songs are all, like, new, like, I could say, like, late 70s, 80s, 90s songs, pretty much. Like, that's, like, the popular, like, genre that they pull from. Like, Elton John, there's Nirvana in there. There's like lots of like kind of disco-y numbers that they've like repurposed. The Police are in there. So it's like a jukebox musical, but like encompassed all of music. anyway, I'm not going to spoil the end. Like I said, I don't know if I should. Now I'm kind of thinking about it because it's kind of part of my, it's part of one of my like little angers with the show is that Satine dies. She's tuberculosis and she dies at the end, which like, it is very sad, and when I was, like, 7 years old, I was crying my eyes out, and I think, again, I think I've said this before, I just, like, when women die because it makes us sad because the man is sad, yes, it works, but it can get a little old sometimes.
Yeah, it's annoying. Which, also, like, I just realized another category for this episode could be tuberculosis.
Oh, no!
I don't think it's explicitly said in the musical, but in the book, I don't remember if it's said or just implied that Shug is sick with tuberculosis.
Yeah, I don't, I rewatched the movie for this too, and I don't remember if like, if it's said in there either, but yeah, yeah. It could have been tuberculosis. Anyway, that's
tuberculosis,
like,
a, the musical.
Yeah, that's like a very minor quibble for me, because like, I don't, the plot is not the most important part of this movie to me, totally. But I just figured I'd put it out there. So, that was very long-winded, but I'm going to rate Moulin Rouge, 9 out of 10, Ewan McGregor, Hard Eyes. When the man quotes Elton John like it's poetry, and when he looks at Nicole Kidman, he looks like an angel. He's so cute in this movie. I had the biggest crush on him. I hadn't watched Star Wars yet. Like, I didn't give a shit about Obi-Wan Kenobi. I loved him so much. I guess maybe he wasn't Obi-Wan Kenobi yet, but this was my, like, Ewan McGregor, I'm in love with you, impetus.
Wow, I love that. Mm-hmm. Hot take, Moulin Rouge is just Hair meets Greatest Showman meets Mamma Mia. I said it.
Okay, it's basically like Club OM, which is what Rent's based on. So like,
yes, that's true. It's like the hippie, like bohemian of Hair with like the grandiosity and like self-obsession almost that Greatest Showman has, with like the camp and weirdness of Mamma Mia jukebox vibes. So Color Purple is actually, if you don't know, it's a book from like 1980, I think, 1982, written by Alice Walker. Then it then became a film in 1985. Hot take, one of the best movies of all time for me, like period. I love this movie. It stars, Whoopi Goldberg as Celie, Oprah,
Sophia.
I literally was like, what's her name? Sophia. And then was made into a musical in 2005. The musical was revived in 2016, I think. Yeah, same year as Hamilton, Tony Awards. So that year. And then It's becoming, the musical is going to become a movie in 2023. So definitely like a text that exists really heavily outside of the musical, I'll say. But it takes place in early 1900s rural Georgia, and it mainly follows the protagonist, Celie, and a little bit, as a side, her sister, Nettie. So basically, Celie is just like horribly sexually abused and goes through a lot of trauma at a young age, sexually abused by her father, I'll add. And she has two kids from that are taken away from her. And eventually, after all this like terrible childhood shit, she's sent off by her father and essentially sold to like marry a man. I'm going to do a brief, like, this is the basic of what happens here. But like along the way, she meets two women, Sophia and Shug Avery. Shug is a jazz singer who's like, especially for the time, very like sex positive and more like vibrant and bold. And then Sophia is like Mr.'s wife. Mr. is who Celie is sent off to, wife after Celie. And she's very like confident and stands up for herself and also very bold. And essentially the whole story is these two women that Celie befriends, like teach her how to love herself. I'm going to give The Color Purple 9.5 out of 10. Cynthia Erivo 5-minute standing ovations.
Oh.
So if you don't know, at the end of the show, Celie sings a song called I'm Here. For me, one of the GOAT songs ever, musical theater. And Cynthia, so LaChance, I'm going to talk about her. She's the original Celie, destroys it. And also Cynthia Erivo destroys it. And more recently, Cynthia Erivo, like when she was in this role, was getting like 5 minute in the, like right when the song ends, there's still like a bit of plot in the closing song that comes after it, but would get these like crazy 5 minute standing ovations from the audience and tear the stage down basically every night.
Wow. That's great. I did. So in the musical, so I guess my thing, I wasn't able to watch the musical where I wasn't able to find one online. So I listened to the soundtrack and I watched the movie. So I like feel like I've got like a pretty good take on it, but I might ask you some questions because you've seen it, right?
Yes, I did. Yeah, so I got to see the version with Cynthia Erivo. And before that, I also had seen a bootleg with, it actually wasn't LaChance, it was Fantasia Barrino from American Idol, who like boots the house down, yes, God Mama, like that vibe, like holy fuck.
I forgot she was in that. That makes sense. But so in the musical, is Sophia Mister's wife after Celie? Because in the movie, she marries his son.
Sorry, that's what I'm... Well, there's, like, there is parts of it where, like, they have, like, definitely a sexual thing going on, but it is her son, the son.
Okay, I was yes. Gonna, like, did I miss something completely? okay, so I have some, like, mixed thoughts about the movie The Color Purple, which we can talk about. I do think it's good, but I have like some mixed feelings about it, mostly because of Steven Spielberg. But I don't necessarily know how those translate to the musical. So I guess I would give the musical.
I think I know your concerns, and I think the musical handles them better, is okay. My hot take.
Okay.
But give your truth score.
Okay, so I think, like, I give the music probably a good, solid, like, 10 out of 10. I think music bangs. It's really good. I guess I'll rate the movie, since, like, so
yeah,
that'll be, like,
that's
my
what you have.
Movie. Yeah, so I think I give the movie, like, a 6.5, a 7 out of 10, like, something along those lines. And I guess I'll just explain that right now, because it's not necessarily, I think, like, Steven Spielberg has certain sensibilities that work really well for like adventure movies, like work really well for Indiana Jones, really well for Jurassic Park, and also work really well for like children's movies, which some of those tend up being like the same thing, like E.T. is like kids in it and Jurassic Park is kids in it. So I guess not necessarily movies for children, although some of them might be, but movies where children are involved in the story. And I think like those sense, like the like sentimentality that he has works really well there. And I think his like propensity to like by all accounts that I've heard, he like works really well with children. Like he's like pretty protective of the kids he works with like most of the time. And like, I think a lot of that shines through in a lot of the decisions in The Color Purple to not make it super violent. It's like a really violent book. Like there's a lot of violence that takes
place. Yes.
And I appreciate a few of those moments where like there's a moment where Celie's sister, it's like insinuated that Mister is trying to rape her, and you don't see anything because she's like a kid. You don't see anything. You just like see him like follow her into the woods. You hear some stuff, and then she like runs out. And like moments like that, I appreciate his willingness to like, I don't need to put that on screen or something. But at the same time, I think like there are so many, while violent and maybe hard to like parse, there's so many like issues that are really, really violent and hard to parse through that I'm not quite sure he, and like far, he's a great director, like far be it from me to like tell him how to do his job, but I'm not sure like his sensibilities are necessarily best suited for those moments, if that makes sense.
Yes, I totally get that. I don't disagree. I think one of the reasons that it's the GOAT for me movie-wise, so I have read the books in the movie and seen the musical. I think just as a text, it is like one of my favorites. And I also have a lot of problems with the movie, but in a way where it's like something I love so much that I like see a lot of things that could be better in it and still think it is just like it. So yeah, that's how I feel about the movie. But the musical, so for me, it's book, musical, movie. I know we talk a lot on this show about like some musicals are able to like outgrow its source material and live a life that is like separate from and potentially even better than its source text. And I think that like the Color Purple musical does that from the movie. I think it's separate from the movie. I think it's its own thing. But the book for me is still like the like penultimate one of this text. Like it's the true one, which obviously it is.
Do you want to start with The Color Purple since we're already kind of
shake
things up a little bit?
Change it up. Let's do it. Yeah, let's do that. Okay. So I have a lot of thoughts on The Color Purple, and I'm going to do my best to be concise. First thing I'll like talk about, which is like probably it's the 0.5 I'm taking off for the musical. And one thing I will give it is I actually thought it was worse than it actually is when I researched it more. But this show does kind of have the effect I've talked about with a couple other shows on this pod, like Dreamgirls and Once on This Island, where it is a like beautiful musical centering Black experiences where the team behind it is not Black. Here's what I'll say. Color Purple is much better than Dreamgirls or Once on This Island, who both their creative teams were almost entirely white. I like looked behind the team here, and so the original creative team, so thinking about who wrote the book, the music, who directed it, and who produced it, half of them are Black. Progress. Better than Dreamgirls and Once on This Island. I still would love to see a world where like black writers and directors and producers like are all given the platform to tell a story as grand as this and have it be fully theirs. That being said, like at least they're included in some way. So the music was written by three people. It was a Black woman, a Black man, and then a white woman. The white woman who wrote the music for the show she's no longer alive, but she was like one of the main songwriters for Earth, Wind, Fire and wrote September.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that crazy? I didn't know that. The book was written by a white woman, and then both productions on Broadway have had white directors. So it's actually 4 out of 9 if you include the revival director, which isn't great. And then the producing team was a white man, and then Quincy Jones and Oprah. So, like, I'll give a little bit of credit, but, like, again, I want a world where Black creatives can make Black stories and like period, you know? So that is like something I'll say. The next thing I'll talk about is the casting in both the original and the revival. People rightfully talk about Cynthia Erivo giving the performance of a lifetime in a show, and like we absolutely should be talking about that, and we'll talk about that. And people don't give, I don't think people talk about in an equal way to someone who gave an, I think, as good, if not maybe even slightly more impressive performance in originating this role that LaChance did. So I haven't seen a version, a full version with LaChance, but there's a ton of like master clips of her, of all her things combined. And like, homegirl gives performance of a lifetime in this role, won the Tony for this. And I just think that like, both this, I think that this is a show where like, if your Seely is not going to like belt to the rafters to like be someone willing to give the performance of a lifetime, like, I don't think this show really works. I think that obviously it's Broadway and obviously you need like talented people, but like, I specifically think that this show, you need Seely to carry the fuck out of this show, because this whole show revolves around you like feeling for, empathizing with, growing with, learning with, like seeing the world through Seely's eyes. And not only that, like, she has some songs to sing, like some big ones. Like, you can't just be a singer or just be an actor and make it through this role. You have to really have the full package. And I think LaChance, I think fucking Fantasia Barrino when I saw her do that. And then of course, like the queen herself, Cynthia Erivo, who I got to see do it live, and is one of the most incredible experiences I've ever had seeing a show. Like, I think they all nail it.
Oh, I agree with you. I want to add Whoopi to that list.
She's, oh my God, yes.
Yeah, I just think I'm Here is like, every time I listen to it, and there are other great songs in the show. I love like What About Love. Like, they're really great songs.
Miss Seeley's Pants, I love that song. Love Push that. The Button.
But I think I'm Here, and it's, she yells it at the end of the movie, right? Or like close to mm-hmm. the movie, like that's what she yells. And I, like, what does she say? She says, I'm black, I'm ugly, and I'm here, or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, like something to that effect, where like, and I guess context for that is everyone calls her ugly throughout the show, and it's really rude and awful.
Yeah.
But I like that it's like taken directly from such a famous line. And I just think like every time I watch Cynthia Erivo do the Tony's performance, which I probably watched it a billion times.
Yeah.
I just start crying.
Yes.
She sounds so good.
Have you seen her closing night one? The like full, because yes. She does the full, oh my God.
It's insane. And she just like, she deserves all of the good things in the world. Like, I think she would genuinely be one of the most like, all around talented people, definitely alive right now, possibly who's ever been alive. Like, she's a great actress, she's a freaking amazing singer.
Oh yeah.
And, like, action, like she was in the movie Widows, which is like one of my favorite movies of the past like 10 years. Like, I think it is so underrated and so fucking good. It's like a female heist movie. But like, I just think she can do it all. She's amazing. Like, yeah. She's EGOT so quick, I feel like.
Yes, agreed. A true queen. A deep cut of hers that I'm obsessed with is, do you know about the, it never came to Broadway, but it was on West End, the show I Can't Sing?
No.
So I don't know if it was her debut, but she was in a show on West End called I Can't Sing that is like about, I don't know if it's like American Idol or X Factor, like one of those shows. And it's like, the whole thing is like all these people auditioning for the show, and Cynthia's character in that, she's like the lead. Her whole thing is that she like can't sing, and she's just there to support. And she has this song called I Can't Sing, where she's like, never been the kind of girl, like the whole thing about how she doesn't sing. And by the end, it's just like squelching her mind out and is like unbelievable at singing. It's really weird and campy, but it's fun. I haven't seen the whole show, just a few bits from it. Okay, so there are four main like points I want to talk about through The Color Purple. And the first that I want to start with is the queerness of The Color Purple and also the complexity of that. I guess I'll start by talking about like the evolution of the book to the movie to the musical. In the book, Seeley and Shug Avery have a pretty, like, explicit sexual relationship with each other and are in love. The book, like, goes into detail about sexual encounters that they have. They very much, like, openly have a love for each other. In the movie, that whole thing is downgraded to one kiss that happens between them, and that's pretty much it. And Steven Spielberg was, like, criticized about this, actually, and he said that he wouldn't do it differently, even if he could. I'm just like, fuck you, man. Like, get over yourself.
I remember reading something, and I think, like, speaking of that movie, that is an annoying thing to say, but I think he also said something to the effect of, like, I was the wrong person to handle that. And I'm like, yeah, like, you probably were. And, like, that gets back to what I was saying is, like, while I, like, appreciate his willingness to, like, shirk around really violent images, especially those that involve, like, children, he's just, like, the way he is not, like, suited to a lot of aspects of that story.
Yes. I totally agree. So in the musical, I would describe it as, like, somewhere in the middle. They definitely have a much more explicit relationship and sexual experiences with each other. And obviously it's also a musical, so they're not going to, like, drop... Well, it's not Spring Awakening, so they're not going to, like, get naked on stage and fuck. So, a couple things. Another thing I realized is that people don't think of Color Purple as a queer show. At least I don't think that's talked about, and I haven't really read much opinions about that, many opinions about that. But I think it really is. And also, there's this, like, official statement about Fun Home being the first show on Broadway with a lesbian protagonist. And now I'm like, are people just totally overlooking Color Purple? I don't know. I think it maybe is a stretch to just say that Seeley is a lesbian. At the same time, though, like, I can't remember if this is in the musical or not, but it's in the book. She has that line about frogs and men and frogs and, like, basically saying that, like, when she sees men, it's the same as when she sees a frog. Like, she wouldn't want to kiss it or do anything with it. And, like, maybe this is just me wanting to find this and reading too much in between the lines, but, like, I think she's definitely at the very least coded as a lesbian. And Alice Walker herself was queer.
Yeah. I guess where I was coming from is, like, but if she has that line about frogs, I guess maybe she, I was coming at it more of, like, well, maybe she's bi, or, like, maybe she's not sure.
Yeah,
or, like,
I thought so too. Yeah, so anyways, now I'm like, I think that this should be considered more of a queer musical. But in terms of the plot itself, like, I love Seeley and Chug. A, because it's not perfect at all, but B, because it's all, like, the love that they have is really the first time Seeley is, like, in control, doing something for herself, like, their relationship. And also, if you really think about it, the whole, like, that is her first consensual relationship. In more than a sexual way, too. Like, I obviously her sister is, like, her best friend, so we'll include that. But, like, in terms of a non-familial member, like, that's her first consensual relationship that she has. And, like, really, that combined with her relationship with Sophia is what teaches her how to love herself.
Yeah, I agree. I love, like, their scenes together in the movie, although the movie does, like, skirt around the issue, their scenes together in the movie are, like, my favorite to watch. Like, the scene where she sings the song to her, and she's, like, blushing when she's, like, trying not to smile, because she doesn't like showing her teeth, and, like, she's trying not to smile as Shug is singing that song to her, and then, like, later when she's, like, no, really smile, like, show your teeth, really smile. Mm-hmm. I was just like, this is so sweet and tender, like... It was just, they're, like, I think they're, even with the fact that, like, the sexual aspects of their relationship were really skirted around, like, the emotional aspects of the relationship in the movie I really enjoy. Yeah.
Totally, totally. I also think that, so what you just said about Cynthia Erivo being, like, of our generation, maybe of all time, kind of, like, unbelievable talent, that is the way I feel about, and I'm very vocal about, Jennifer Hudson, who to me is the most underrated artist of our time. I don't think she like has the icon status she deserves. And don't get me wrong, I think she is seen as an icon, but I don't think it's like I think that she is 100 levels ahead of everyone else, icon. And she played Suge Avery in the revival and was just unbelievable. And the chemistry between her and Cynthia Erivo was, it was it. Okay, so that's the queerness. Next, I want to talk about like the trauma and abuse and the role that plays in Celie's journey and like why I think it's so important. And I know that you were just saying in Moulin Rouge how you're kind of tired. I mean, death is different than trauma and abuse. But, like, I think that a similar thing is trauma and abuse, especially in women, especially in Black women, can be overplayed, you know? Not overplayed is not maybe the wrong word, but it's like, I want to see stories celebrating, you know, like that kind of vibe. I think the trauma and abuse in this show actually is really important and plays a really pivotal role in the whole story and in Celie's life. And, like, if you really sit down and think about what she's gone through, like her dad raping her multiple times, extreme poverty, physical abuse, sexual abuse, basically being sold to this asshole, always told that she's ugly, like dealing with compulsory heterosexuality, like the frog line gets me. This whole, like the whole show is about every single source of her world telling her that she's unlovable and that she doesn't have worth. And that is what makes it so much more special when she unlearns that and finds love in herself, because she has just internalized all of this trauma and all this abuse her whole fucking life. Yeah, so I do think that, like, it's used in a way that's not, like, trauma porn and in a way that is, like, a true multidimensional character who's overcoming stuff.
And I do think there are a lot of examples of joy in this show as well, and the story in general. So.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, two more things I'm going to talk about. So, and they kind of flow into each other. So the next is, like, the role of, like, God or religion. So I grew up Catholic, went to Catholic school my whole life. I'm now an atheist. I don't believe in God or anything. But I do, like, I hate when people are like, I'm spiritual. But, like, I'm spiritual in the sense that, like, I think that humanity is connected, and I think that, like, our consciousness and humanity means something, and that we are meant to be, you know, like, together as a society, whatever. And I have never felt a more deep connection with, like, a movie or show or something portraying religion as I do in The Color Purple. It's a huge theme. There's a song called The Color Purple and a reprise of it in the show, and the opening lyric for both of them is, God is inside you and everyone else that was or ever will be. And I love the interpretation of God in this show, because to me, like, it's very in line with what I feel with, like, our consciousness. And, like, Suge Avery says, like, God's not some, like, old man in the sky. Like, God is not that. Like, and then she starts singing, God is inside you and everyone else that ever was or will be. We come into this world with God, but only those who look inside find him. And it's all about, like, introspection and thinking critically about yourself and looking deep within. And, like, when you find that love in yourself, that is, you know, when things shift and when things change. And to me, I think that's beautiful. That's something that really resonates. The whole, like, line that is the way this book, this text gets its name is Suge Avery saying, I think it pisses God off if you walk by the color purple in a field somewhere and don't notice it. And I think that's, like, really, really beautiful. To me, this show is about oneness. Like, it is seeing the divinity and the beauty in the world, and therefore, by association, like, seeing it in yourself. And I think that it also shows that finding the love in yourself is what helps you find love and see the love in others. And that leads me to what I think is the overall point of this whole piece of text, piece of work that is so beautiful, and it is radical self-love. And especially if you're thinking back to the original author, Alice Walker, like, for a queer Black woman, in, you know, writing this in the late 70s, early 80s, Like, what is more radical than unabashedly and fully accepting and loving yourself? Like, nothing. And that's what this show is. The whole climax of this show is not like, nothing like crazy happens, really. Celie just decides to love herself. And that's what I'm Here is. Like, she doesn't need the love of someone else to make her complete. It's about just truly accepting her life circumstances and loving herself because of and despite them. So she builds this like confidence from within. And like, that is what Cynthia Erivo gets that 5-minute ovation for, is showing all of that in that song. And those are my thoughts on The Color Purple. I fucking love this show.
Mine isn't going to be quite as but
okay, I think Moulin Rouge. Oh my god, I didn't rate Moulin Rouge.
Oh my god, rate Moulin Rouge right now.
Okay, because I think in a very different way it is up there. I think I'm actually also going to give Moulin Rouge a 9.5
Yay!
Out of 10. Ewan McGregor, hard eyes.
Yes, he literally has hard eyes. Side note, I've been watching Ewan McGregor's travel show, which I have just realized exists. And it came out in like 2004. It's called Long Way Round. And it's him and his friend decide... Have you seen it? They decide to get...
No, I was singing Dixie Chicks.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
My friends in high school.
Yeah. They decide to get on motorcycles and, like, bike from London to New York. And they go through, like, Eastern Europe and then into Mongolia. Or they go to, like, Ukraine, Mongolia.
Oh my God.
Up into Russia. Then they go to, like, Kazakhstan or whatever order. I'm not good at geography. But then they go, like, on to Russia. And then they, like, fly to Alaska. And then they go down to Canada and to New York. So they're just, like, roughing it, kind of. And it's like,
yeah.
Ewan McGregor, I feel like, is such like a silly, but like very like, he seems like a tender-hearted person. And I think I'm just like reading too much into this show. But there's like, there are all these moments that like kind of reminded me of Christian a little bit, which is so dumb. But he would be like, they were talking about how tough the road was in Mongolia. And there was like a moment where they're like, oh, maybe we should just like go back to Russia and like go where there are actual roads and it doesn't take us like 3.5 hours to go 12 miles. Like, let's figure out how to do this. And he just starts kind of tearing up and he's like, I thought it was made of tougher stuff than this. I was like, no, stop crying.
I've never seen it.
It's a really good, like, Sunday, maybe a little hungover show. It's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
But Moulin Rouge, I love this movie so much. It has like everything I've ever wanted. Ewan McGregor, Nicole Kidman. It's like a play within a play. It's like the ultimate jukebox musical. Like I said, it's got insane costumes, all these like amazing glittery sets. And it also has like a good original song, because Come What May is an original song that was originally supposed to be in Romeo and Juliet, I believe. Another movie I adore. But it got moved to this for a reason I'm not sure of. But I wanted to start with this quote from a recent article that came out about Moulin Rouge, because it's its 20th anniversary. It's 2021.
Ooh.
Yes, so we're very timely right now. But it's from The Guardian. It's by a critic I really like named Guy Lodge. So I'm going to read this whole thing. It says, Lerman's textbook postmodernism, repurposing late 20th century pop for the essential purposes of early 20th century opera, practically future-proofed itself. Its full-hearted embrace of its own bad taste and shameless anachronism was either its defining charm or its critical failure at first sight. Either you're sweepingly moved by the sight and sound of Nicole Kidman trilling out One Day I'll Fly Away into the Night astride a gilded papier-mâché elephant, or it makes you curl into a tight ball of mortification, but the reaction is likely to stick. And I just think that encapsulates it so perfectly.
It really does.
And I am definitely of the super randomly moved by Nicole Kidman singing One Day I'll Fly Away. The other day I was just like running around my apartment singing One Day I'll Fly Away. but I just think this movie is such a glittery, like unashamed, all out blast. It's got like delightfully campy numbers and acting, like absurd shimmery costumes, and like it's weirdly horny at parts, and then like it's melodramatic. It's like really horny and sexy in the way that I feel like movies aren't like horny like that anymore, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
I just love it so much. It's all packed into this musical that's like kind of half like weirdly sucks and is a little uncomfortable. Like the Like a Virgin sequence is so uncomfortable to me. And I say like kind of sucks, like I mean that really lovingly. And yeah. It's also like absolutely perfect and takes itself so seriously, which I think is like really embodied by Nicole Kidman and Ewan McGregor. I'm going to talk about Nicole Kidman a lot because I think like she doesn't get a lot of credit for how fucking funny she is, and she's really funny in this. But Ewan McGregor is taking this thing so seriously. Like, his hard eyes during Come What May, I can't help but cry when he's like singing that to her and he tells her that it's like their thing, so when things get really bad they like know everything's gonna be okay. He just looks so earnest and sincere, but not in like a, I don't know, I think like earnestness can get mistaken for like insincerity or like it's too much. Like Lin-Manuel Miranda falls prey to this a lot. She's like the overly earnest thing. But I think Ewan McGregor is also pretty earnest, but it just comes off like so sincerely in this and in the trash show that I'm watching. And I think at Guy Lodge, like, I think he really nails like the full-hearted embrace of its own bad taste. Because I do think there's a lot of it that's done in bad taste. Like the show that they put on is like based on Bollywood. It's kind of clearly offensive. But I also want to point out, like, to a 7-year-old, like, it's great to watch something. First of all, I was probably way too young to see this, but I loved how absurd it was and that it didn't take itself too seriously. Like, as a 7-year-old, it was just, like, wacky and crazy and fun to watch. And then as I, like, got older, I was like, that's still really fun. And also, I can, like, really appreciate what these actors are doing. And I think it's really great. So I want to talk about Nicole Kidman a little bit. I think I've talked about Ewan McGregor enough. I have a big crush on him, like top 5 crushes ever. But I think Nicole Kidman is like wildly funny in this, like the scene where she's seducing. First she's seducing Ewan McGregor and then she's like seducing the Duke while trying to stop him from finding out that Ewan McGregor is in the room. And her like physical comedy is really great. And I think like people, maybe no, they don't forget. Actually, no. No one forgets how tall Nicole Kidman is, but, like, she's able to use her limbs, like, really well. And as a tall person, I understand, like, sometimes you're just lanky and you can't really control your body, but she has a lot of control over her body, and I think that's really impressive. And I think, like, Baz Luhrmann, she's in a couple of his other movies. She's in Australia, which is not as good as this, but she does have that same kind of, like, she just gets to be, like, weird and wacky and funny, and I wish, like, she got to do that more. She kind of got to do it in The Prom, but she's not really in The Prom that much. So
yeah, it's a very, very side scene.
Yeah. So I'm like, Nicole, do more stuff with Baz Luhrmann, or like do stuff where you're just like allowed to be a wacky, funny person. I mean, she's really good at also being like a traumatized rich woman, but I like when she's allowed to be a little wacky too. And then I don't know. That's a lot of like what I have to say about the movie. And then I wanted to talk a little bit about like the, musical changes, but do you have anything else you'd like to say about the movie?
I think I really agree. I think it knows what it is. I think it's like not afraid to be really outlandish and weird, and I love that review that you read about.
So
like,
good.
I think that's exactly how like I feel about it in a way that's kind of hard to put into words.
Mm-hmm.
I also love the iconic, like literally one of the most iconic songs of all time that came from it, which is not even in the movie, but,
Lady Marmalade. Like,
So Lady Marmalade on the soundtrack was literally, it was the first single they released from the soundtrack of this show, as like promo, I think. And it's, if you don't know, it's, Christina Aguilera, Maya, whom I have a little thing with.
Oh, my God.
Lil' Kim and Pink. And it is just, it was the best-selling song of the year.
I'm obsessed with it.
And I think, like, same.
Yeah.
And my little gay kid ass was belting my heart out to that.
Yes. That's also, I remember so much about that song. Because I think it was, like, Pink's Behind the Music or something like that, that I've seen a million times. where she would, like, talk about how she was really mad because they wanted to give all the hard parts to Christina, and Pink was like, fuck, yes. I can do that too.
Like, they resolved that beef over Twitter in 2017.
Oh my god. I'm glad they're friends. I just want all my girls to be friends.
I know. And wait, I have to tell my Maya story real quick.
Yes,
so
please.
I lived in Nashville in the summer of 2015, and that was actually my first Pride I ever went to was that summer. And it was, like, co-headlined by the drag queen Chad Michaels, winner of All Stars of One of RuPaul's Drag Race, and with icon Maya. So anyway, it was so fun. I got to see her perform. I was, like, not that far from the stage. And then there comes a point where she, like, starts bringing, like, probably about 10 to 15 people up on the stage, and I was one of them.
Oh, my God.
And it turns out it's, like, it's like kind of like a runway walk, like semi-dance, semi-runway kind of, like, challenge contest thing. And I won. It was, like, by crowd cheer, and, like, I ended up winning it. And so on my Instagram, there's a picture of me being crowned, or she's putting, like, a sash on me. And I like to say that I won Nashville Pride in 2015, and Maya crowned me.
You did. That is a great story. Maya of Lady Marmalade fame. Oh, wow.
Yes. and some and, R&B.
And like, other soft R&B. I know, I'm being rude. Yeah. Other fame.
But no, you're right. Like, I would say her biggest crowning achievement, and this is not tea because it's a huge crowning achievement in my eyes,
yes,
is Lady Marmalade.
I would kill to be Maya in Lady Marmalade. So, okay, I do want to talk about, so as far as I know, I have not seen the musical. I was actually supposed to go see it last year with a friend, but then coronavirus happened. So, anyways.
I almost saw it. Well, I had tickets to go see it, but also, Sammy, I was visiting Boston the weekend it opened, and I didn't realize until I got there, and I literally saw signs for it, and I went to find tickets, and I texted our friend Emma Noyes and asked if she would go with me, and the tickets were all sold out.
Oh, man.
So I didn't get to go, and then I was going to see it also, but then COVID.
Yeah,
so
near misses.
I haven't.
But I do, so I've listened to the soundtrack a lot, and I think, like, okay, here is my feelings about what they have done. So basically, like we said, Moulin Rouge takes, like, 70s, 80s, 90s hits and, like, puts them in the setting of opera. And I like what Guy Lodge said, because it's like fun because it's, like, a turn of the century art form. So it's opera about an opera. And then it's, like, late century entertainment. So, like, the songs of, like, the later century in the art form that use songs of the early century. So that's, like, a fun, like, contradiction and a fun mix. And what the musical does, it seems to me that they were just like, well, it's been 20 years, 19 years, however long it's been. Let's just add, like, a bunch of famous songs in here. And there's no real, like, rhyme or reason to it at all.
The kicker for me is Firework. That's the real kicker.
Yeah. I think, like, mine was, because I was listening to Elephant Love Medley, and I remember this because it was the first time, like, when the musical cast recording came out, I was listening to it, and I was, like, singing along, and then all of a sudden, Erin Tate's like, I love you, always, forever, near and far, and then she just goes, love is a battlefield, and I was like, wait a fucking second, and then they start singing, like, Ben Folds, and then it's, Torn, and then it's, like, freaking, oh my god, what was the one that, like, really put me over the edge? Oh, like, No Doubt. So it's not even like they were like, oh, Torn really gets me because Torn is a 90s song. So, like, Torn could have been put in the movie and they did not use it. So, like, it's not like they were even just like, oh, well, let's just, like, think of the songs that have been released since 2001 and we'll add some of those in. It was like, we're just going to take more from the 90s too and more from the 80s too. And so, like, I have a list of some of the songs they've added if you don't know. So, we've got,
oh, I know.
So these are some,
there
are
favorites. Some good ones.
Oh yeah. Sure. There are some good ones. There are some good
they're
ones.
They're not even bad, but just like, why?
Why?
Ones.
So I'm going to read out some of the ones I feel like, why? So we've got, So Fresh So Clean by Outkast. We Are Young by Fun. Brick House by Commodores. Shut Up and Dance by Walk the Moon. I can like feel
that my, one.
I can feel myself rolling my eyes if that comes on when I'm in a theater. Like, Firework, like you said.
That is the pièce de résistance of this for me. Especially because it's not one of the medleys.
Yeah.
It's like its own.
Which is like, just why? Why? They also add like a bunch of Rolling Stones songs, like randomly for no reason. I Said Love is a Battlefield already.
Okay, I kind of like that though.
I get it, but like.
Give Jordan Sparks her respect!
No, that's Pat Benatar! Love is.
No, it's Jordan Sparks.
No, it's not! Okay, what?
Why does love always be?
Okay, whatever. And then I think the one that really gets me is Fidelity, like the Regina Spektor song.
Oh my god,
what is this doing in here? Because it's an Elephant Love medley, and it also, like, it breaks the feel of it so quickly. And you're like, whoa, I'm listening to Regina Spektor now. So that's just a lot of them. I just, Bad Romance, Toxic by Britney Spears. Ugh. I just don't really know.
Like, on Broadway?
Right. It's not even that. It's like, if you can, like, give me a good reason besides this is a popular song. And yes. I don't know. Maybe that's what they were doing when they were creating Moulin Rouge. But don't you feel like there's, like, a rhyme and reason to, like, the songs they choose in Moulin Rouge? Like, it's all kind of... I think I wrote down most of the artists, like, the more modern artists. So they have, like, a couple of jazz standards in there, like, Someday I'll Fly Away. They do Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend, but like the popular artists that they choose are like Donna Summer, The Beatles, David Bowie, Whitney Houston, like I feel like Kiss, like I feel like there's some sort of, I don't know, those all like feel a little connected to me in a way that like Outkast, Britney Spears, Regina Spektor, and Nelly do not. No. Like, and I think like in that review, like they all feel of a time, and the song choices here just feel like all spread out all over the place, and just like we wanted to put these in because they're. Can you stop? He was under the bed and he just popped his head out. Sorry.
Wilbert.
Yeah. So that's what I have to say about the musical. I don't think they really change like too much else, and I like who's casting it. Like I like Aaron Tveit. I love Karen Olivo.
Well, you know she's boycotting.
I know. Which also, good for her, because isn't this like a this a Scott Rudin joint?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Fuck that guy.
Or actually, I actually don't know if that's true, but...
Wait, I'm gonna look it up right now.
I think she's protesting the industry in general.
Oh, well, that's perfect, too. That's great.
The lack of response.
Yeah, it also is a Scott Rudin joint. So fuck that guy.
Okay.
Fuck that guy.
So both and.
Yeah. No, that's great for her though. I love her.
One last thing before we recreate. Okay. On the most recent season of Drag Race, the literally last week's episode, one of the people did a Moulin Rouge like inspired look, and I just texted it to you.
Oh wait,
it's really I love it. It's the Queen Jan, Jan Sport.
Oh my
She's
god.
She's a New York queen. Category was frills on the runway.
Wow.
Moulin and spoiler alert, she won.
Oh my god, she looks amazing. Wow.
Yeah, she really did that.
That's beautiful.
And that's that on that.
Okay. I guess speaking of all that, that does feed into my recreate, so I'll get started with that. This is silly, but I thought it would be fun. And I'm going to have you pick a few things. But only really one thing. So just one thing. So, I was thinking, like, in the spirit of Moulin Rouge becoming a musical and them deciding, oh, we have to, like, update all the popular songs. And then also inexplicably adding more songs from the 70s and 80s. So I was thinking if Moulin Rouge were made today, like, the movie's a brand new thing, we don't have a musical, what artists would be included? And also, kind of going off the Guy Lodge thing, like, the contrast in this works because it's, like, beginning of the century, end of the century. So I figured I'd like shorten the timeline because obviously we're not at the end of a century and I don't plan to live that long. So we're going to do like beginning of the century to 2021. So the art form has to come from the beginning of the century. And then like the songs come in like 20 years following.
Okay.
So I'm going to let you pick an art form from the early 2000s / late 90s that we might choose for like setting our scene. So you can pick creating a boy or a girl band, probably a boy band, but maybe a girl band, or creating a reality TV show.
A girl band.
Okay. So let's get started. I didn't do every song, but I did like some of the main ones. So we're just going to go through some of the main ones. So for Children of the Revolution, which is like the song that they kind of sing as they're like, it's right after they do like the spoof of The Sound of Music and they realize Christian's a good writer. They start singing Children of the Revolution. And it's kind of like, I mean, it's exactly what it sounds like. It's exactly what the name implies. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to think of like an early 2000s, like more like protesty kind of song. And I came up with American Idiot because it's already in a musical.
Oh,
like, I feel love. Like that could be something that they're singing. So maybe
lends itself well to
yeah.
the stage.
So maybe there's like, this is like, they get like the band together or the girls like get together and they're like, we're going to take ourselves to the record company. I don't know how the music industry works. And they're like kind of singing this. They want to be like a little more like, yeah, fuck yeah. And they're like singing this on their way to, I don't know, Sony Records. I don't know how music works. Anyway. And then for the Lady Marmalade / Smells Like Teen Spirit kind of like mixture that they do, you know what I'm talking about? Like, it's mm-hmm. like, yeah. it's really cool. And there's like other songs in there too.
Yeah.
But those are the two that I picked out. I decided to pick Buttons by the Pussycat Dolls and then Heathens by 21 Pilots.
Wow.
So I was trying to think of like kind of a sexy like girl song.
To, yeah.
And then Heathens. I think like
into Nirvana.
Yeah, and like 21 Pilots is not Nirvana, but I was like, what does like rock music kind of sound like at this point? And like,
yeah.
And also, I think those songs like might weirdly mix well at some point. Like mm-hmm. loosen up my butt, all my friends are like it's a Santa na na.
Yeah.
You could do something with that. For Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend / Material Girl, which is like the Sparkling Diamond Nicole Kidman entrance song. So maybe at this point, so like maybe Buttons and Heathens is like, no, you guys have to be sexy. Like this is like the record company, or they're like going into like the pop music world, and this is like the introduction they get, and they're seeing like different bands, or whatever. So I feel like the Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend and Material Girl section can be like introducing. We got to bring this new girl in the band. Like we got to have a star or something, and like she comes in or whatever. So I decided to keep Material Girl, but that becomes like the older song. Instead of Diamonds Are a Girl's mm-hmm. Best Friend. And then for the Material Girl song, I chose I Don't Want It At All by Kim Petras. Because it's kind of the same vibe.
Oh my god.
It's like the materialism vibe, right?
Yeah.
So that's what I picked. And then for your song.
Oh, woo.
Yeah.
Ah.
Yes. I'm kind of going to leave the story a little bit here because I want to get through this faster. So for your song, I was thinking of like a love song that like everybody knows. And the first thing that came to my mind was Somewhere Only We Know. So I figured it has that vibe. Like it's kind of like a simple.
Yeah, I see that.
For Like a Virgin, I chose Irresistible by Jessica Simpson.
Oh my god.
Because
honestly, we don't talk about it enough.
We don't. And I also just listened to a podcast. It's called You're Wrong About. They did like an episode on a couple episodes on Jessica Simpson and her memoir. And she apparently like really didn't like the way this was marketed. Like she's like very Christian. She likes like country music and she did not want to be like a sex pot virgin. And they like made her be a sex pot virgin. And in Moulin Rouge, the Like a Virgin song is, like, sung by Zidler and the guys who are, like, saying, this is how she'll react or whatever. Like, this is how she'll be. So I figured, like, that's kind of an interesting mixture there. For El Tango de Roxanne, which is my favorite part of the movie by far, it is incredible. I was trying to think of a song you could, like, slow down. And I picked, like, three that are kind of like breakup-y slash about sad things, because Roxanne is about like a sex worker. Not that that's inherently sad, but the song is like plaintive, you know? I picked three options. Burn by Usher, Waterfalls by TLC, and She Will Be Loved by Maroon 5.
Wow. I love all of those. May I add Tattoo by Jordan Sparks?
Yes, this is the Jordan Sparks podcast. Of course you can. Okay, so the last...
She was the Nina I saw in The Height.
Oh, that's really good. Oh, she was probably great.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
She was phenomenal.
So, for the last... I'm just going to do Elephant Love Medley. So, there's like a ton of songs in this, obviously. It's a medley. So, they do like a Kiss song... which is like, I was made for loving you, baby, you were made... There's a Donna Summer song, Paul McCartney song, the Beatles are in there, Joe Cocker's in there, David Bowie's in there, Whitney Houston in there. So I was trying to think of, like, what can I, like, put together that's gonna, like, bring all these together? So we have Somewhere Only We Know Again, because your song is slightly in the Elephant Love Medley towards the end.
Yeah.
And then I was like... Chasing Cars would probably be in this at some point. I feel like people were obsessed with that song. I Don't Want to Miss a Thing by Aerosmith, even though that's technically for another movie, but whatever. We Belong Together by Mariah Carey.
Oh my god, I was about to criticize you for your lack of Mariah.
Okay, no, we got it. Mariah would definitely.
I'm glad you put it.
Yeah.
There's one other artist I'm holding out for.
Uh-oh. Okay, well...
Actually, two.
Oh, well, we only have two more songs, so we'll see.
Okay.
So I picked Angel, like, girl, you're my angel. Damn my darling.
Oh my god. At first I thought Sarah McLachlan.
Oh, we can do... That might be good, too. And then the last one I thought of was If I Ain't Got You by Alicia Keys.
Oh my god, was that one? Was one
good.
Of them.
Okay. Who did I miss?
That was one.
Who did I miss?
Missy Elliott.
Oh, we could do... Lose Control, like somewhere.
Ooh,
like they put on,
I'm into
like,
that.
Yeah, and that brings Sierra in there too, so that works. Okay,
so for my recreate, I honestly was thinking a lot about this, and I was like trying to think of like maybe making the queerness more upfront in the musical, or I don't know, all these different things, and then ultimately I was like, honestly, this is not my show to like do a recreate for that is like actually trying to better the show. So what I came up with is kind of like a related, like, not sequel, but like in tandem, different perspective that to make another musical about.
Okay.
And this would be a musical about Nettie. And like, so basically at the beginning, Celie kind of like her whole thing is that she wants Nettie to be able to have a life. So that's kind of why she is like, okay, going away with Mr. And like kind of... in a way, sacrifices herself for Nettie. So this would be like a parallel show where they're both on the same, it starts and ends the same. So you see their contacts together, and then at the end, they're reunited again. And it's like both of their paths. And the way Nettie is like, I would make kind of mirrors Celie's journey in a different way. So if you don't know, in the book and musical and movie, Nettie eventually like is... sent to Africa and is with Celie's children and living with missionaries there. So this would be kind of like a deep dive into her and like her self-discovery journey. Okay, for the name of it, this is kind of like, it's not as good of a name as The Color Purple, but I like the sentiment of it way more than I like the actual name of it. And it would be The Sound of Clapping. So like, okay, we can workshop the title, but instead of The Color Purple, like, which is kind of Celie's self-love moment with like realizing the divinity in herself and seeing a color purple in the field and all of that connecting for her. I thought for Nettie, since Celie sacrificed herself for her, basically, it would be really cute if like, her like self-love moment is through clapping, which is like what connects that Celie and Nettie. They have this like clapping game together. It's really cute. And so it would be like we see Nettie's side of the story. She's what happens to her in Georgia. She goes to Africa. And then when she's united with Celie's children, I really love the idea of her teaching them about love and God through the clapping game that she used to play with Celie. So that's kind of like their like moment. And I thought it would also be funny, like, Shug Avery has that line, I think it pisses God off when you walk by the color purple and don't notice it. I thought it'd be funny to have some kind of, like, nod to that, like, a parallel, but with, like, clapping as a part of it. So, also, think of what cool things you could do with clapping, like, musically. Yeah. Just saying. So, anyway, Celie, like, in The Color Purple, Celie has trouble loving herself because of all the abuse that she, like, endured in the world. And, like, Nettie definitely isn't shielded from that, like, has her own fair share of trauma. And I would say, at least of what we know, that happens to a much lesser extent than with Celie. And with, like, Celie kind of, like, taking one for her, I really like the idea of, like, so Celie has trouble loving herself. I like the idea of Nettie, like, being fully confident in loving herself because of Celie and, like, loving her and loving herself through that because she was there for her. But having trouble, like, loving the world and, like, opening herself up and, like, always being guarded because of the experiences she's had. So she carries Celie's love with her. She, like, has that immense, ferocious love for herself and for Celie, but doesn't share it for the world and is really skeptical. So then when she's paired with Celie's kids, she, like, sees their ability to love the world and see it through new and curious eyes. And also has that connection to Celie. So she's, like, introduced to what a loving home life could look like and see that the world is a beautiful place, like Celie does, and that she doesn't have to keep this guard up against the world. And then my favorite part would be, so at the end of The Color Purple, we've talked about this a lot, I'm Here, iconic yeah. Bring the House Down song about Celie loving herself. And then right after I'm Here, right, it's actually a few years after, but it's, like, yeah. right after the song is where it takes place. Is when Nettie surprises Celie and, like, visits her. And so I thought that it could be a parallel thing. They both sing a song called I'm Here. So Celie's is about self-love. Nettie's is, like, the journey that she's taken to be reunited and, like, she's there with Celie. And then the honk comes and she, like, finishes the song, honks, meets up Celie, and they both, like, reunite. And that's where it goes. So that's my concept for, like, a side musical, and we get all about Nettie.
That's so cute. They play their clapping game at the end.
Yes. Uh-huh. I know. Yeah.
Oh, I love that so much. That was great. Oh.
Thank you.
Okay. This is so much fun.
This is great. I'm loving this season. I'm loving how things are going.
Me too. This week was full of, like, self-love and, you know, romance. And next week, it's not full of those things, is what I'm going to say. Or I guess in, like, 2 weeks, because no. We are taking a hiatus. I think we should do that. Or kind of late mid-season hiatus. But
yes.
Do you want to give a little preview of our next category?
I will, but also on the late mid-season hiatus, if we're treating this like an intermission, I would say most of the time the first act is longer than the second
That's
act
true.
Anyway. So we just had a slightly longer first act, mm-hmm. and we'll have a slightly shorter second act.
Yes.
But anyways, the theme for next week is Party Gone Wrong.
It's about to get bad.
Parties fail.
Parties go horribly wrong sometimes.
That's a slight hint. That's a slight hint at one of the shows.
Parties fail. They do. Sometimes they're not good times.
Yeah, truly.
Well, everyone, follow us on Twitter if you want, at RateDebate1. You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at RateDebateRecreate. And hope to see you 2 weeks from now.
Yeah.
All right.
Bye.
Red.